Welcome to the White Book Podcast, the original A Game of Thrones LCG podcast.
Originally founded in 2010, as two champs and a chum, we decided to rebrand when the game relaunched in the second edition. A huge thank you goes out to Fantasy Flight Games and George R. R. Martin for this game and world we love, and of course to my co-hosts and you, the listeners. Please, if you enjoy the show, leave us a review on iTunes or your platform of choice, comment on our Facebook threads, or even better, support us on Patreon. We love turning that kind of support back into the community.
This is Season 12 of the White Book Podcast.
Hit the button, Will.
But I already hit the button.
Oh, well, that's Will. I'm Aaron. The other one's Roy.
The other one. We should get t-shirts that could just say things like that.
Yeah, it should just say the other one's Roy.
The other one's Roy. Well,
that would be great. Yeah, Aaron and I could both have the other one's Roy, and Roy could just have Roy.
I mean, I don't think Glazer actually says the other one is Roy enough for it to be a meme.
I think that's the only time I've said it.
Probably. I know. But it just sounded meme-worthy instantly to me.
Yeah, it did. Glazer's good at that. He's good at speaking in proto-memes.
Thanks. It's definitely because I stand up in front of a class and have to think on my feet because I never know where a sentence is going when I begin it.
That's dangerous, but I'm with you. I'm with you.
Look, there's 30 children. They must learn and be entertained. Oh God,
no. Aaron's a gardener when he speaks.
Oh
much
my God,
like
Will, no.
George R. R. Martin.
Will, I don't believe in cancel culture, but there's one person right now who should be canceled. It is you for making that joke. That is like low, low bar. Low bar. Like lower bar than me making cancel culture jokes. Like that's a low bar and shouldn't be done, but that... George R. R. Martin joke was, you know, as a man of 37 or however you are old.
Yeah, that sounds right.
Right.
Mine own co-host.
Can you two talk about this shitty show since we're already there?
Our co-host just nipples on a breast, like nipples on a breastplate, like
God.
On Batman's chest piece.
Oh, there we go. There we go. Look. One thing you should know at this point, if you've made it this far, Sam, David, whoever else is...
Hey, other guy that wants us to review cards.
There we go. Like, you should just absolutely know that words are wind. All right? Just words are wind.
So much wind.
By the way, you guys, I say that to money. People at work, like when like the administration is like making some policy and it's like, oh yeah, we're going to be nice. We care about your... like well-being while we're also making you do all of this tedious stuff that doesn't actually help educate students. And people are like, do you think they actually care about our like mental health? And I said, words are wind. And somebody said that was very deep. And I just laughing. Like, I was just like, just like, no, like, just, no, no, no. It's no.
Just take the accolades and run with it, Roy.
Oh, I did. Oh, I did, Will. That's just a maturing. Instead of just cackling in the middle of a meeting.
Oh, man.
Well, do we want to start with House of the Dragon or do we
you guys started quoting George R. R. Martin at each other and I immediately
Will did.
I didn't quote anything. I just tried to make fun of him.
Okay, first off, all right, before we do that, I gotta let you know, I got this Natty Bohemian here, and for dinner, I had two slices of pizza, and then I was still hungry, so I wanted, like, kind of a second dinner, and then I had the leftover tofu from the other night, and then, you know, I was like, do we have any Oreos left? And I had the last two Oreos, and the best part about that was that they're double stuffed. So they were like really, really filling. So like, I'm just really excited to wash all of that down with this Natty Bohemian.
So that's just called the beginning of the school year. I ate five tacos today, and then Carl's like, I brought you a donut, and I immediately shoved that in my face. Wow. It was just like the beginning of the school year, like the stress and exhaustion, you're just like food in face now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I definitely forgot my lunch today, and I had to eat a Subway sandwich. And the Subway sandwich that I ate, it had olives on it and lettuce and what else? Cucumbers. Yeah. Oh, of course, oil and vinegar. Yeah.
You're not getting better than olives. Olives are amazing.
Oh, yeah. It's all good. Yes, olives it had that.
Used to be good.
Terrible Subway bread. But.
Oh, well, yeah.
It also had Lay's chips, and I got a Coke, which was a really nice sugar intake in the middle of the day. It really helped. You know, and this is after three cups of coffee to sort of get me through the day.
There we go.
We should probably talk about House of the Dragon.
I don't know. I think this long food diatribe is very fitting for discussion about Mark.
Well, is it? Is it, Will?
He spends a lot of time on food descriptions.
I never noticed.
Okay, so the show itself. We've had episode 3 at this point. I think.
Yeah, spoiler alert.
Spoilers. We are a spoiler full show, podcast listeners. So, Jason, if you haven't watched it, please turn off the episode.
Pause.
Let's see. Jason. Only episode 1 was out last time we recorded, right?
No, time out. No. Yes. But, Jason, you can keep listening because, like, the show is fucking atrocious. You'll be fine. Like, spoiling it just might make you not.
That's true.
Spoiling might make you not watch it, and then, like, we've just saved you time, and everything is better.
I wouldn't go quite that far, but, you know, it's not.
Good?
I spent a lot of time thinking about this. Like on my ride to work today, I was like, how do I want to sum up my feelings about House of Dragon? And it's just like, put a certain way, it's like Game of Thrones at home. And it's missing like the things, and I think we said this when we talked about the first episode, like it's missing some of the things that people like didn't really appreciate that existed in Game of Thrones. Like characters that are like sympathetic and are like entry point characters, which like a lot of grimdark fantasy fans who are like, you know, think that I'm escaping me of like the most grimdark fantasy author on the top of my head, but like that any entry level character who isn't like Joffrey is, you know, just unrealistic garbage warmed over D&D novels. Right? Like, but the fact that there is no Jon Snow or Arya or Sansa or like even really early Daenerys in this is kind of like a drag, at least I found so far with Rhaenyra. Because Rhaenyra is, maybe it's because I'm biased because I know what she does in the book, but she's just not as like good of an entry point character for me.
Interesting, likable, funny, charming.
No, I think she's interesting so far, and the show is definitely trying to go out of their way to push her as protagonist. Maybe a touch too hard, especially with this whole White Hart business in episode 3. Daemon, I think, is still engaging on some level. I'm honestly so far most fascinated with Viserys. I think his portrayal has actually had a lot more depth to it than I would have expected from Fire and Blood. But I don't know. I think you're right though, that there's just not as much of a clear, like, good guy hook the same way there was protagonist hook, maybe I should say, but the protagonists were very much presented as, here, look, here are your cast of good guys to root for at the very beginning of Game of Thrones. So
charming and funny and likable, or like fun to hate because they're charming and kind of douchey.
I mean, Daemon's definitely trying to be that.
Daemon is
trying to be okay, charming, but he's not. And douchey.
But he's not. He's instead just sociopathic and creepy.
Yeah, because I think that, like, Matt, again, I think this is also something we said. It's like, I just think Matt Smith was not well cast as, like, Damon, the way I imagined him. Like, I think Matt Smith's a great actor. But I think, like, when he plays that type of character, it reads differently than I think they want Damon to read. I mean, and nothing's clearer than in this episode with this huge, like, Damon as John Wick action set piece. Mm-hmm. Or put another way, it's like medieval James Bond action sequence is even, like, I think more fitting than even John Wick, which was really well shot and choreographed, but also kind of, like, absurd and strange. Like, it was like, this is the most beautifully batshit action sequence of all time. In many ways, it had the opposite energy of, like, Battle of the Bastards, which, like, took itself so seriously. And it's like, I have such important things to say about war. This more felt like, what if James Bond was in the Middle Ages? Okay. Different energy. Just not what you're expecting from Game of Thrones.
It doesn't sound... Okay, yeah. That's fine. I think you talk about this, I'm like, wow, would I hate that.
I mean, we'll see how the rest of the season goes, but I have a sneaking suspicion that they chose the wrong, like, moment to start telling this story. I feel like to have an equivalent moment to match, like, this tale up with the way Game of Thrones starts, like, you probably ought to end, like, episode one, maybe, with Viserys's death, like, and just try to find some way to sum up little pieces of this back history that is necessary. Cause we started in this kind of muddling along period where they're like, hey guys, by the way, we need to spend at least, like, 6 episodes just telling you all the backstory of, you know, all this family business. And that just, I don't know.
I think a lot of the problem is George Martin's not a good writer anymore.
I think that's definitely, I re-listened to Fire and Blood in honor of this show. Cause I was like, I should, like, refresh myself on this. Cause I remember, like, enjoying Fire and Blood. Like, cause its shtick is really fun to me as, yeah, you know, somebody who agreed. Was trained as a historian of, like, what makes it fun is that, like, Martin's like, well, there's, like, 3 sources. And he tells what those 3 sources are for any of these major events. It's like, make up your own mind. Right? It's like
old fun. Mushroom.
Yeah. Mushroom. And, like, the more serious academic one, like, that's kind of, like, fun. And it lets Martin get away with his, like, insane Martinisms, but be like, that's probably what not actually happened. So it's like, it's pretty good for what it is. It's a fake history book. Like, and that's, like, puts a cap on how good it can be. But sure, within that genre of writing a fake history book, it's about as good as it could be. But it also kind of poisoned me for the show because, like, there's so many characters that are important to this story that we still have not met.
Yeah, we still haven't met Aemond, by the way, which is the one scene that I am just dying to see out of this whole freaking show.
He hasn't been born yet, literally.
Yeah, he literally hasn't been born, which is part of why I think they started this in the wrong spot, because it necessitates so much dead time, basically, until the ball actually, like, starts rolling. Like, so far, we're just spending a lot of time, you know, setting up our pivot point and getting the lever underneath the boulder and so on, versus, like, Game of Thrones started with somebody pushing the lever, basically.
Yeah. Well, I think also a problem for me is, like, I really want to like Rhaenyra, and I really want to like the way they're exploring the themes of the ways in which patriarchy checks women and checks, like, even powerful, well-connected women's ability to sort of, like, control their own destiny. I think they're interesting themes. Do I think Martin's source material is necessarily the best way to explore these themes? Question mark. But I really liked Rhaenyra in the second episode, which was a really good episode, as much, again, as an episode that's a plot could be, which will the king fuck, the 9-year-old or the 15-year-old, which is basically the plot.
12. She episode. Was 12. I am not defending Viserys. I am only correcting the fact.
The 12, excuse me. Okay. But all the Rhaenyra stuff in that episode was excellent. But the third episode...
Actually, the Daemon stuff I thought was great in that episode, too.
The last moment with Daemon, I agree, was good.
Yeah.
But, the last one with Damon.
Where he was like, where he and Corlys are like, we're the second sons, we need to prove ourselves and go fight the man who...
I have a warmth through second sons.
Exactly. Sure. Well, and the thing is, Corlys says some stuff basically about how... He's talking to Damon directly and says, like, your brother is weak and, you know, indecisive and we have to step up and blah, blah, blah. And Damon kind of cuts him off and says, I will talk about my brother how I like the way I want. You will not. And
it,
I really.
It was a strong Matt Damon, Matt Smith. There we go. Moment. Mm-hmm. But I think Rhaenyra in episode 3, the acting was excellent. And the acting, like Game of Thrones itself, like the acting is almost always excellent on this show, even when the writing is questionable and the plotting is questionable. But I think she's in petulant teenage phase way too long for this story to work. Like, yeah, I like
also like, good point.
Why do you want Rhaenyra to be queen? Like that's like the case. Like, you know, this is a story about a civil war. There's going to be like you, like half the realm or something like that is going to side with her. Like, what is the case? Not just that you swore an oath. Like, what's the positive case for Rhaenyra? And so far, the show has not done a good way, like a good job of showing that. And I think that's an important thing that they need to do, because there was two ways to tell this story. You could tell it as Rhaenyra's the badass, you know, girl boss protagonist, or there's Team Green and Team Black, and you get to choose which side you want to cheer for. But they're going for the Rhaenyra as the central character because of where they started, various choices they made through these first three episodes, which is fine. Like, it's a very acceptable way to tell the story. But you need to make me be like, yes, Rhaenyra. Like they did that with Dany. Like, you could talk about Dany as white imperialist or whatever, but at the end of the day, she is about destroying slavery. She is about freeing these people. It's like, okay, Dany has, like, a positive reason you would want her to take over the Marine or take over Westeros, you know, break the wheel, all that stuff. But Rhaenyra has none of that besides like patriarchy sucks, which is true. But what are you going to like, what is Rhaenyra going to do to smash patriarchy? Or if she smashes patriarchy,
she's going to change things. That's, I guess, that's all she said so far.
Yeah. So they need to do some work with that. But we'll see if they do. Because
spoiler, they're not gonna.
Because the next episode is peak Martin, like peak Martin, like peak Martin stuff from Fire and Blood is in the next episode. So we'll see how they handle
what,
that.
What do they skip to the next episode? I think I forgot to watch the trailer. Teaser.
Like I'm gonna be like, this is super spoiler. So skip like ahead a minute, like because this is from Fire and Blood. It has not aired yet. All right, folks. Will, do you remember Fire and Blood? Just one final spoiler warning.
I started a reread of Fire and Blood, but I've only made it into Jaehaerys. I've not actually hit the dance yet, so I'm a little fuzzy on like the order of stuff. But like, I'm not worried about spoilers.
Okay, cool. I just want to be fair. Okay, because Rhaenyra's sexuality and like who she's fucking is like a big open question, right?
Right, right.
And the first scandal of like, did she fuck Damon when she was like 17 or 18? Is like a whole thing. It's like 5 or 6 pages of a, like a 30 page like section. Right. But like that's what the next episode's about.
Oh, okay. Probably not the direction I would have gone with it, but okay.
Ew.
Oh, she marries Damon. Like I not wanting to tell like people eventually. Who are just starting watching. Like,
second husband.
Yes, I know. But they have 2 kids, right? 2. No, 3. One dies at the beginning of the thing.
Do not recall now. She has 2 with Laenor, right?
There's 2 with Laenor, 2 with...
Then well, 2... I say Laenor in quotes. I should have cleared
right, that. Right, Laenor. And then she has the 2 boys who become king. I forget if she has... I think she has a daughter, too, somewhere in there.
Yes, she does, because... If I remember right, it's after the death of the first 2 boys and then the daughter when Rhaenyra starts to really
right. The daughter runs off to try to get the dragons. Okay. Yep. All right. End of spoilers for Fire and Blood / House of Dragon. Yeah. So anyway, are we good to talk about the twerk heard around the world?
I didn't care about the twerk like at all. I don't get the big deal. I don't know why anyone gave a shit.
Yeah, I don't care. It was just something like silly at the end of an
Easter egg. Yep.
Like, whatever.
I mean, it's the single worst thing that's ever happened in the history of humanity. Did you not watch the 7-part quartering video log about it? Come on, guys. Like, get with it. Get with the culture.
So you spend too much time. We've said this before. That. In the worst corners of the internet.
I didn't watch any of that, Gleaser.
So I took your advice and you were like, it's Ally McBeal energy. And now I enjoy it.
Okay. Yeah.
It is. Like, I mean,
it's not my favorite Marvel thing, but it's fun.
Yeah. No, it's been fun.
It's fun. This episode, I thought episode 3 was the best.
I feel like it was a marked shift kind of. Probably into more of what the show is actually going to be like. And I was okay with that from like a tone and, you know, gags and plot and whatever perspective. I think the only downer that I would say from this episode is, like, after all the internet hubbub about CG, I watched the first two episodes and I was like, I don't know what they're talking about. Marvel obviously cleared this up. Like, these look good. And then this episode, like, looked like an Xbox 360 era video game, and it was very disconcerting to me.
Well, Will, it's because they spent all the money on the twerk, all right?
When
your VHS, your visual effects artists are spending all of their time making sure that ass really wiggles, all right, in a realistic, not in Candy Valley.
Oh my God.
This is the tour current around the world. Like, you're not going to be able to make some boring ass office scene as good as a scene actually about ass.
Have you guys seen that behind the scenes footage?
Amazing. Yes.
The Star. I don't think this is the direction you're going of Star Wars, where George Lucas is bugging some poor CGI artist about the Yoda fight scene. And he's like, no, spin faster. He's got to spin faster. And the guy would run into issues where, like, it would make Yoda's robes literally fly off his body and stuff like that. I'm just picturing, like, Faggy there at the poor office, just like, no, she's got to jiggle harder, jiggle harder.
Well, I did see the behind the scenes footage of that scene in She-Hulk. It was quite enjoyable. I really enjoyed it. It's a shit post of a show. Like, it's just by people who watched a bunch of MCU movies. Like, it's just full of in-jokes and fun things with an Ally McBeal plot wrapped around it. Like, I just don't know why people hate this show so much. Well, I mean, I do, but...
Yes, you do. You 100% know, because it stars a woman and it makes fun of men. There, you're done.
It's true, Glazer. We all like Tim Roth, though. He was sweet.
Oh, yeah, he was great. And I mean, honestly, even I can't think of his name now. The guy that played Adrian Chase in Arrow.
The guy who played Pug.
The guy
is her like junior associate.
Yeah, I like him a lot. Although, thanks to Arrow, now I keep waiting for the moment that there's some terrible reveal where he's a villain. But
yeah, I mean, I'm like, the number one thing I'm looking forward to every week is She-Hulk. Like,
really?
Yeah, like, because I just enjoy it. It's not like the best thing that I have ever watched in my life, but I know I'm going to have fun for the 30 minutes I watch.
Yeah.
Oh, like,
guaranteed. I think it's the key word. Yeah.
Just guaranteed. Like, House of Dragon, roller coaster of emotions. Rings of Power, less of a roller coaster, more of like a gentle drive.
We'll get back to that.
But like, She-Hulk, I know I'll have fun from the moment I press the Marvel logo goes to the moment the twerking starts. Like, it's just fun.
I am a fan of She-Hulk. I think I like it a little less than Roy, but I still like it just fine. I think what's most notable about She-Hulk is that I enjoy it, but I have no feelings for it.
That's fair.
Like, not a feeling at all. Not like, I really like this, it makes me happy. Not, it makes me sad. I enjoy it, but I don't think about it. I don't think about it when it's over. That sure is cute.
It's just the thing you did. It's 30 minutes of your life.
It's 30 minutes of my life that I could spend worse, right? Like, I could be doom-scrolling Twitter, or, like, watching Jorb's play Slay the Spire for some reason, or, like, whatever. And instead, I'm watching She-Hulk, and She-Hulk's perfectly good television. I am fine with it.
Perfectly cromulent.
It's cromulent. Yeah, it's cromulent. Fine.
You're whelmed.
I am very whelmed. Look, if I had to place it in the Marvel pantheon, it would be right smack in the middle.
That's perfectly fine.
Yeah, exactly. I'm okay with it. It's certainly better than Doctor Strange.
So, but we all know that She-Hulk is like just it's setting up the divisions in the fandom. Like you can see the cracks. They're like they're obvious. And then Wakanda Forever is going to come and just someone's going to judo chop those. And the whole ability of people to discuss superhero content anywhere, internet, real life, whatever, is just going to break.
But, so just say The Last Jedi.
It's going to Last Jedi up. Thankfully it happens after the election, because like it's going to be that level of like impact.
Dumb. That level of dumb.
Yes. That level of like Gamergate nonsense, because clearly it was a mistake to put fandom at the center of our culture.
Like,
the internet was the mistake.
But like, imagine if Korra came out today.
Korra?
The legend of Korra.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Like, the world would break.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of people who are like, Asami, erasure of who was that boy that was her boyfriend in the first two seasons.
No clue. Him. Got it.
That guy, right? Down. Erasure of him. And I was like, at the time, I was like, I mean, Tumblr won. Like, Tumblr won in Korra. The ship that was promised won out. But yeah, that definitely felt like a high point. Like, I was like, oh, the culture's changing. Of course, it wasn't. But
I mean, it was just, it was about to get so much worse instead of better.
Yes.
It's just not the way you were aiming for.
That's true. That's true. Because was that pre-Gamer? No, it was like right after Gamersgate, I think that came out.
I don't know the exact time frame, but it was pretty trouble.
In the bad time.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, people are very, very dumb.
I agree.
Including us, probably in many ways. But, you know, at least we're not Gamergate.
Oh, we are.
I thought you were going to say at least we're not Bodhi levels of dumb.
Holy shit. So yeah, I watched Lock and Key season 3. And 1 and 2 are
the show.
What?
Already? There are 3 seasons of that show.
This is the last season. They're done.
Okay.
Season 1 and 2 are really, really good.
They are.
Season 1 is great. Season 2 is very good.
And was a respectable like end to the series.
Yes.
They could have just and should have just stopped there.
Season 3 is a humongous piece of shit. Like, if I had enough strong enough feelings about this, it's Rise of the Skywalker bad.
Whoa.
Oh, it's real bad. Every single thing that happens is terribly acted, terribly delivered. Every single thing that happens hinges on every character being a complete moron and forgetting everything they learned in the previous seasons.
Okay. So it's like a CW show. Yeah.
The least compelling
also bring
villain.
Back a villain.
For 2 episodes and then she disappears and there's no resolution to any of that.
Yeah.
It's so bad. And like she disappears with the Omega Key, which is, I don't know, man. It's a very, very bad show. And I wish I didn't watch. And it made me angry every minute I watched.
Wow.
Again, I don't.
You stuck through it, though? That's very un-Glazer-like.
I tried first to. No, I'm married, unfortunately, and my wife was like, we have to finish it. We watched all this. I was like, but please stop staring at your phone. You're not being present. I was like, I want to be present, but it's making me angry. like if I cared about this enough, this would be one of my least favorite things ever. Thankfully, it's Lock and Key, so I'm just going to file away. I'm going to lock Lock and Key away in my memory as some shit that Netflix did. Instead of like worrying about it, but this season was bad. Like, I didn't really like the season of Umbrella, and this made that look like fucking Shakespeare. And those two shows are very closely linked in my head.
I mean, I could definitely see that as far as, I don't know, they have a very similar kind of graphical tone and story tone. Yeah.
I mean, they're from the same era. Their origins are the same era of Dark Horse, so it makes sense.
Oh, that's a good point. I hadn't even thought about that.
Umbrella maintains a sense of fun that I don't think Lock and Key ever gets. But either way, don't watch Lock and Key, or at least just watch season one, and then maybe consider season two.
If you want a like solid conclusion, watch season two. Like everything was wrapped up and had a bow on it at that point.
But you don't get random Revolutionary War people as villains.
What?
Yes. Yeah.
Like the American Revolutionary War?
Yeah.
Yes.
Like is it an actual like historical figure or just some made up person?
Some made up.
So it's not like George Washington or something? Like Assassin's Creed?
Oh, well, so, and they're British.
Yeah, a red coat is their demons sort of possess people sometimes in very complicated silly matters. And one of them is a revolutionary,
a loyalist.
A red coat, just straight
up. A red coat, straight up British. So.
He's an officer.
And he's a super powerful demon. He's so powerful that, like, the old demons are even scared of him.
Classic.
It's very like.
But also, you just made the best case for me ever watching Lock and Key because I fell off the first season about halfway through. I was like,
if you want some terrible TV, you will enjoy. You, Roy Rogers, will enjoy season three because it's that kind of terrible TV you enjoy. But like, not because it's good in any way, just because it's like Dark Knight Rises camp.
Whoa! Whoa! Whoa!
I know my audience.
Wow.
Well, Dark Knight Rises was 1,000 times better, but it's like the same tone, right?
We do not speak of the Holy Writ here in such dismissive tones. Okay, we should just move on to you being like a good father, Glazer. How did you teach moral values to your son this week?
So for the past like year, we've been watching Boy Meets World, and it's a wildly inconsistent show as a TGIF show is wont to be. But it's really heartwarming and smart and consistently really good. And 90% of the morals are really well delivered. It's not perfect. There's like 2 gay jokes in the entire show that really don't land. But it's... And there's a lot of, like, mean poverty humor. But, like...
Classic.
Almost everything else about the show really works. Almost everything about the relationships really works. Boy Meets World is excellent. It's heartwarming. It's really good. The later seasons get, like, no, not later seasons. The last 2 seasons get too silly for their own good, and they, like, simplify and dumb down a lot of the characters to really, really flat, where they weren't, especially at the start. Like, the show has some serious depth at the start, and it slowly loses it over time. But it is very good. And if you have kids or just like really, like, old family sitcoms, I, like, strongly prop Boy Meets World. But Noah saw Girl Meets World because it's recommended on Disney, right? Because Disney Plus is where this exists. And he was like, we got to watch Girl Meets World. Is that Cory and Topanga's daughter? And I was like, yes, but I've heard really bad things.
Wait, I'm just sorry. It just blows my mind that Noah is old enough now to make connections like that. Jesus. Where does it go? Where does it go?
So, it's horrifying. But so we watched 2 episodes of Girl Meets World. And, like, the show is atrocious. Like, it's not bad. It's just, it's barely watchable
I mean, it just has zero depth to it.
No, and it's not even charming.
I don't know. I really thought that, I'm trying to think of the character's name. Her best friend.
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah, she's the best part of the show.
She is charming, and their relationship and interactions are really quite good. But yeah, the rest I think is pretty flat. And I'm just straight up baffled that they made the same mistake as the original show by including the like awkward and annoying younger sibling. Like, Augie was, to me, the worst part of that show by far.
So the worst part of the show, and it really makes me angry, is Corey.
Really?
It doesn't feel remotely like Corey. It's the worst teacher I've ever seen.
Corey is the worst teacher who you've ever seen?
Yeah,
Corey,
he's a teacher in that show. Yeah, he's a teacher. Yeah. He's absolutely atrocious. Topanga is so flat. Like, there's not, like, she's literally just wife at home. There's nothing identified.
Wait, with Topanga is?
Yeah.
No, she's a lawyer.
Yeah, and she's flat. There's nothing
I identified. I mean, she's a lawyer. Dang it. I just combined that. Yes, I mean, her characterization is flat, but she's not just a wife at home.
No, no, no. But, like, she has nothing. Fine. I don't mean her job. I mean that her persona. Like, she's got nothing going on. She's not involved with anything.
She well, I mean, you said maybe you only watched two episodes.
But, like,
that does ease up later. She decides she kind of, like, wants more excitement in life. And do you care about spoilers?
No, not for Girl Meets World, no.
Yeah. Girl Meets World.
She winds up, like, the little old lady that runs the, like, bakery downstairs wants to retire, and Topanga.
That's not Topanga. That doesn't fit for Topanga at all. I just
Topanga becomes like a baker.
I just watched.
I think she just becomes a landlord. If I remember right,
okay. It's not better. I'm sorry. Topanga becoming a landlord, that fits her character to a T.
What?
But not Topanga as like cutesy Portland baker. No. Her being a ruthless landlord who's constantly raising rents. That's the Topanga I knew.
That is not. They're in New York City.
Oh.
At the end of the last episode, they moved to New York City from Philly. And at the end of the last episode, the series is in New York City. I mean, it's besides an occasional mention of the subway, in no way recognizable as New York City, but that's
I assume they live in, like, a Brooklyn brownstone, right?
Look, it was never recognizable when they lived in Philly, right? There was nothing in Philly about it.
The backyard is not very Philly.
Well, and he liked the Phillies, and that was what you got. But, like, yeah, it's really bad. Like, so, Boy Meets World feels like a family show, a show you're meant to watch with, like, kids. The parents were supposed to watch the kids and, like, explain the complicated things. And, like, Feeny has a lot of, like, the, like, real genuine moral lessons that, as a teacher, he gets to just come out and say. And, like, there's a lot of family stuff. Whereas Girl Meets World feels like a children's show made for children that are not old enough to know how bad it is.
I mean, this is what I started to say earlier before we got to recording, is the fact that Girl Meets World was a Disney Channel original, not even Disney Plus, it predates that, was a Disney Channel original versus Boy Meets World's ABC, TGIF, at its height show. Like, that really hamstrings Girl Meets World. Like, those live action shows, I mean, all of them in general, but particularly a live action show like this that wants to almost masquerade as being more than it is. In the end, it is aimed at a demographic of like 8 to 12 year olds, and that is it.
Noah's 6 and he thinks it's funny, but like, he thought Boy Meets World was funny and he laughed a lot. He thinks this is funny, but he's yet to actually laugh. So I'm a little concerned. I think he just likes the familiar faces and world. But, like, it's not good. It's just not good. I want it to be good. It's bad. I talked to a former student who watched it in her formative years. And she's like, season 1 gets better, and then season 2 gets so much worse. So I'm excited / dreading this. But, yeah, just don't watch Girl Meets World unless you have a 6-year-old for it.
I think it's got 3 seasons, if I remember right. Yeah.
So I don't know. She didn't say anything about season 3. I asked her, and she said, whatever. But season 2 is apparently, like, the worst handling of autism ever.
That is
I straight up don't even remember that detail now.
Farkle, apparently, who's a character I really wish didn't exist in the first place. He's not funny. He's not charming. He needs to go away.
Yeah.
So, is it true that the older brother runs for, like, U.S. Senate in Girl Meets World?
Eric runs for U.S. Senate?
Yes, he does.
I mean, I wish I could say that was unrealistic.
It's kind of fantastic.
Yeah, that's... I mean,
Eric, it is not played as a particularly serious thing.
I mean, Eric is a complete fucking moron. And boy. Like, his whole character, after season, like, as soon as he has a real character in Boy, he's the idiot. And he gets dumber and dumber as it goes. He's Homer Simpson, right? Like, that fits with a current U.S. senator. I'm not being facetious.
Yeah, no. That was bitter laughter.
Okay.
Look, we have like Dr. Oz is like running. Dr. Oz is running.
Is he still? Senator. Has anyone seen him yet?
He is the official ass Republican nominee to be senator of the great Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. And he doesn't even live in the damn state. Okay? Like, that Eric from Boy Meets World running for Senate, sure. Like, sure. Like, these are far from the most absurd thing. And Donald Trump was president. Like, should be real. Anyway, do we want to talk about murder or power?
Let's do Rings of Power.
Yeah.
I think I'm the high man on it.
I was going to say, I want to say I was busy and I've only had the chance to watch episode one.
Me too. I read about episode two in case Roy wanted to spoil it. I figured this way he wouldn't have to worry about it. Also, you know, I read the books. So, like, I'm not going to be surprised. I'm pretty good on what happened.
Another
fake history. Okay. Spoiler. There's rings and there's one of them to rule them all. Okay.
Hey, right. That's how this ends. Not how.
Yeah, I was going to say, there are no rings in episode one yet.
We met Celebrant.
There's no rings in episode either. Spoiler alert.
That's true.
Spoiler alert. Still no rings. I was told that there would be a ring. There's still no ring.
So wait.
Lies.
I don't think it's explained in episode two, but Meteor Dude is definitely Sauron, right?
No. The best theory I've heard is it's Gandalf.
It better not be.
It doesn't fit the timeline as I understand it, but you know, they've been like shortening stuff.
Doesn't he like milk like black blood out of a cow or something when he shows up or something dumb like that? Like I'm 90% sure that's Sauron.
I literally have not read the Silmarillion since our student's age, Glazer. So like my memory is,
I watched a 10-minute review of it today while I was just laying around like watching YouTube videos. I was like, oh, 10 minutes of the Silmarillion. This is going to explain point two of it, but sure. So I did. And I was like, I remember all this. I have fairly fond memories of the Silmarillion, even though it's not good.
It's fantastic.
I don't actually like the second age. It's the age I don't like. I really love the first age, and I really love the third. I think the second first age.
Wow. Deep.
Oh, the like. I mean, the not the. I don't like the
cool stuff.
Yeah, I don't like the creation mythology, but once they do Gondolin and all that stuff, I really like the different hidden cities and like,
yeah,
the story of Turin and that big tragedy and like Baron and Luthien is cool and the Mariner dude. It's all, I like all that.
Fingolfin, who fights Morgoth in single combat and wounds him seven times.
But Morgoth is fucking unkillable. You dumbass. What was your plan?
He didn't. I mean, he had a plan. It's called suicide by
cop. Yes, I had suicide by
suicide by Morgoth.
Like suicide by cop, but Morgoth.
Yeah,
pretty similar. All right. Despite my lack of general care for the Second Age, and thinking Galadriel's a little strangely characterized, I like it a lot. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, terribly. Whatever.
It's fine. We're not in the MCU version. Like, on Galadriel here. She's fine. But it's a little bit of an intense...
Right. It's just not where she was ever presented in anything else, which is fine.
Right.
I don't actually...
And it does feel unusual, like, to me, from the perspective of being an elf. It kind of makes me question some of their grasp on, like, the lore.
Elves don't really change as a person. That's not true. Like... tons of elves change as people over the years. Like, they're like, I hate men and we'll kill them. I'm like, oh, fuck, that one saved me. Man, y'all cool. Like, elves change constantly. Like, it's worth remembering that throughout the Silmarillion, like, the actual Silmaril story, elves are straight up assholes. Like, the Silmarillion is the story of Morgoth making fun of elves for, like, 3,000 years because they're assholes to each other. They're like,
longer than that,
the girl I like? I'm selling out my city, bitch. None of it.
I mean, that's very classical mythology.
Right. Right. Like,
I know why it happens and where it comes from, but elves are straight up dicks.
I mean, like, to be fair,
and they're political.
It was weird to cast the elves as a soldier occupying Baghdad. Like, that's the energy. It's like, I'm watching The Hurt Locker. Like, it's like, what is this?
It felt right for me.
It didn't feel right for, I don't know, Tolkien to me. Like, Give me some, like, I don't know, Dragon Age style, like, fantasy deconstruction. Okay, sure. But it just didn't feel Tolkien-y to me.
I don't know. It didn't look. It's the weakest thing in the episode, for sure. But, like, it didn't feel terrible. I get the elves who are, again, consistently throughout the Silmarillion total assholes. There's, like, six heroic ones that get betrayed 50 times each. By other elves. But, like, so there's this...
There's more than that.
Okay, sure. but, like, I get them being, like, that wrong asshole in charge being, like, I don't trust those motherfucking people over there. They supported Morgoth.
But, like...
And, the elves, the big thing about elves, like it said constantly in the Silmarillion, is they don't get mortality. So, like, it's right. Very easy for me to understand that they wouldn't get that a different generation isn't just the same shit.
I can buy that. That would make sense to me. It did make Galadriel's brother, and the next, like, 2 seconds after that, super weird, where he's like, I won't always be here for you. And then her voiceover says, and we didn't understand the concept of death. And I'm like, oh, okay, then what was your brother talking about? Because it's very clearly framed that he's talking about death.
I got nothing. I don't know. That was the first 2 seconds of the show. You're 100% right about that, though.
It was just weird. Just like, I guess I'm already coming at it from a critical eye because I just really fundamentally feel that modern Hollywood does not understand the Tolkien, like the heart behind the Tolkien mythos, and that it's not going to connect with me. So, I mean, does that maybe set it up for failure from the get-go when I'm watching? Yeah, that's possible.
I was just happy it didn't try to be Game of Thrones.
That is definitely, I mean, the moments it tried to be Game of Thrones, because I want to go back to the elf as Baghdad occupier, because that was the moment that it felt like Game of Thrones, but like it didn't do a very good job of like explaining like why these particular humans were giant assholes enough to, like, I guess they supported Morgoth. But a bunch of humans supported Morgoth. Like, why this crappy village was, like, specifically so, like, crappy that the elves spent centuries, like, watching it and being dicks to all, specifically these humans. I wish they had done, like, a better job. Like, you'd be like, Morgoth's greatest general came, you know what I mean? Like, came to pass. And then I could be like, okay, that makes sense. Like, instead it was just like, humans suck. You know, like, it was just pasting, like, imperialist Islamophobia, pick your like specific form of discrimination that imperialists place on subjugated people, on top of the elf human dynamic, which I'm not opposed to. Like, it is definitely a reading that you can do of that dynamic, but I didn't think it was particularly earned in this case.
Oh, it's not.
Particularly because it's like kind of chucked as like they start embracing the more like Tolkien-y elements of Tolkien. So that's like that the biggest cognitive dissonance in the first episode was that sequence for me, which felt like this is kind of trying to bring some Game of Thronesy themes and try to like read Tolkien's work in a 21st century way, and that could be interesting and could work, but in like the most fundamentally lazy way possible, just like elves, dicks, humans, subjugated people.
I'm surprised that threw you out the most and not, like, just the Harfoots in general, because that threw me for a loop.
But wait, why?
But here's the thing. They were really boring to the point I took my phone out and started doomscrolling Twitter, just like all the Hobbit scenes in the Hobbit movie. So it felt like I was watching The Hobbit, like The Lord of the Rings.
But it shouldn't. That's my problem. Like,
wait, no, Hobbits are fundamentally boring.
Yeah, like, I'm sorry.
And that is literally their point. And they didn't, like... They weren't a part of the events of the first two ages.
Yeah.
And 99% of the third age.
Yeah, they got a show to sell. You're going to get Hobbits, right?
You're going to get Hobbits. As much as I also would love if there were no Hobbits, because I fundamentally find Hobbits incredibly boring.
I would love if there were no Hobbits in Lord of the Rings. I don't care if Sauron wins. I don't need Sam and Frodo.
Sam and Frodo are good, in small doses. Like, small doses. Like,
if they've spent any fucking longer climbing that mountain with that whining, like, holy shit.
Okay. That does get pretty old in book three. No.
Two Towers, the Sam and Frodo stuff is so boring. Like, it's high. It has a couple of high highs.
It's good when then, Gollum turns up, right? And if Gollum's not there, they're terrible.
Pretty boring when Gollum is there. Like, there's some cool things. Meyer the Dead Man, the spider, I guess, still gives me nightmares. That's it. The rest of it is just walking, Gollum being a dick, Sam being in love with Frodo. They're unable to express it because of the compulsory heterosexuality of Tolkien mythos. Boom. Done. Like, that could be like 5 pages. Like, but it's a lot more pages. And the movie is just as bad. And then it adds that whole, like, Frodo almost giving the ring up to a Ringwraith thing. Oh my god. I'm still traumatized by the Hobbits.
It's they're not good. The Hobbits are, like, I understand the idea. The Hobbits are excellent symbolism, and they really do make the story work for the generation it was told in. Like, it's so bad. It's like they're a working man's analog, right? Like, all the rich and powerful don't shit without the working class, basically, right?
Well, the peasant class. Not working class. Yeah. Working class is bad. Yeah. Working class are orcs, man. It's the peasants. It's the peasants.
Sure. But Tolkien is like, Tolkien doesn't fundamentally trust rich and powerful people, right?
That they can wave around.
Well,
and even cool. then, at least, they basically start betraying each other immediately unless they were, like, raised in poverty or raised in exile.
Well, the King Arthur thing, yeah.
But, like, yeah, if you're raised as wealthy and powerful, you're not to be trusted unless your parents are really cool.
Or, bro... Theoden King. But don't listen to that annoying guy whose name is Wormtongue. Definitely if someone comes to your court, Wormtongue, or something tongue, or something that sounds kind of sinister, and it's like, bro, I got the best idea. You know all that bad stuff that's happening down the street? Don't worry about it. Just don't worry about it, man. Why would you worry about it?
It won't come here.
So, I mean, like, I thought it was strongly enough implied that he was, like, magically controlling.
Yes.
Well, he was,
yeah,
but
definitely
he was. Yes.
But, like, all right, yeah. Either way, aside into Lord of the Rings aside, I think Rings of Power. It was never going to be Lord of the Rings. It was never going to be like the pure fantasy tone. And the Silmarillion is a very different tone in a lot of places, right? Despite supposedly being like a history where it's just like shitty elves being shitty to each other and then humans being shitty to each other, like. You remember what happened to the Silmarils, right?
Yeah.
The Sons of Fëanor just start killing fucking other elves at the end after the war is over to steal.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's not just all bound up in, like, being crappy, right? Like, it's
not all crappy.
The Fëanor and his line in particular, his sons, like, some of that's bound up in specific like plot terms, the doom of Mandos and the problems with swearing an oath you can't actually fulfill and so on, but like a lot of that is working through the problems with like excessive pride more than
I don't know. A lot of it is, I think, even more than pride, and maybe this is a portion of pride and I'm misphrasing, but, like, people feel like they're owed shit all over that. Elves feel like they're owed X, Y, or Z constantly. Love, I'm owed power, I'm owed respect, I'm owed this, I'm owed the Silmarils, I'm owed this.
I'm owed the thing I created. My father created.
Well, but it doesn't have to be, there doesn't even have to be that much of a tie. Sometimes it's just like, I saw that girl, and now she is mine, and I own her. I am owed that girl. It doesn't matter if she's in love with someone else.
I remember one elf that does that, and he is, even before that, described as being not right, so to speak.
There's at least two or three, I'm pretty sure. But there's also, like, I am owed this leadership. I'm owed this dominion. I'm owed whatever, right? And, like, there's a lot of, like, and it's not only the elves, sometimes it's the humans, where, like, I'm owed leadership, I'm owed power, I'm owed whatever. And, like, the idea that you deserve something because of who you are, because of whatever, and, like, it always goes poorly. But, like, either way.
Not always. I mean, there's a lot of hereditary rule that, or the like inherent, like, divine right power that Tolkien definitely comes down in favor of.
Yes, yes, yes. But they all end up dying. Right. None of, like, the elves straight up lose.
Well, I think...
I mean, yeah, they're fighting a power greater than themselves. Like, the context here being that beings of the earth can't defeat, like, spiritual powers.
So that's what they say in the book, but that's not what the book shows. The book shows them fundamentally able to win 1,000 times if they could put aside their pride.
No. Like, they can't.
So,
even name? Had Eru, who you named, made you thrice greater than thou art, Feanor.
Yeah, yeah. They say, like, no one's ever going to beat Morgoth in one-on-one combat, right? But, like, they have him completely contained and locked up in whatever dumb place several times in the thing where they're just like, someone's going to screw this up. And like, they, like, at first they basically kick the shit. Like, when they first arrive, they kick the holy shit out of Morgoth's forces. And then, like, immediately, like, oh, dumb dude who made the fucking gems rides off alone with, like,
yeah,
10 other elves into the middle of an ambush. And it's like, oh shit, look, I'm dead. Ah. And then, like, Morgoth tricks one of them into fighting him one-on-one when, like, they only lost one battle, and so on and so forth. And, like, there's a whole lot of, like, if the elves would just stop being shitty and unite, they would be strong, but, like, the kinslaying mars them forever.
Yeah, I was gonna say that there's the whole fallen people's original sin kind of concept. Yeah.
But, like, it's the decisions of the elves that mean, like, in story, like, they say lots of other shit, like, they could never win, but it's their decisions that mean they could never win. It's not like innate. They couldn't kill Morgoth, but they easily had him contained multiple times.
Well, I mean, like, what gives Tolkien, I think, is, like, thematic power, right, is he does successfully, like, merge, like, older pre-Christian understandings of, like, myth and the world is, like, cyclic, with the Christian understanding of, like, original sin, and that there is, like, good and evil, like, capital good G and capital E evil, and they're always struggling, and good can overcome evil, but because existence is cyclic, and a man is fundamental, and elves as well, but men are the most extreme version of it, and elves are the least extreme, but are still vulnerable to it, right? Like, that will just constantly cycle, right? So, like, Aragorn will defeat Sauron, but, like, three generations later, as Tolkien in the sequel to Lord of the Rings writing when he died, would, like,
so depressing.
Will come back, right? Like, that's fundamentally, like, it's both that, like, pagan Celtic, like, there's a man again who translated Beowulf, right? Like, and like, understanding of the world combined with that sort of Christian, like, moralism and fundamental, like, pessimism about human nature, that I think gives it a lot of its residential, it's like resonance. And I think that the show does a decent job of tapping into that in a way that, like the thing that's different about Tolkien than Martin, or especially the, like, grimdark people, is that, like, Tolkien's not cynical.
Right.
There is good with a capital G. Like, Aragorn is good, right? And Frodo, even though he is human and frail, well, hobbit,
whatever. Well, yeah, I knew what you meant.
You know, he's mortal and frail, and, like, in the last moment, he has a moment of weakness, but he's still good. Like, Frodo wants to do good. Sam is just good, right? And even, like, there is, like, capital G goodness. And the show doesn't shy away from this. And that is something that I did appreciate, like, that a lot of other, like, if this show gave fully into Game of Thrones syndrome, would not be present. as much as I think the show is, as the kids would say, firmly mid. Like, just fine.
I liked it a lot more than that.
But there's a lot going for it. So.
One of my favorite Tolkien ideas is the idea that by, like, doing great things and, like, trying really hard, you can become one of the great. Like, when, like, the end of Lord of the Rings, when the hobbits come home and are like, we can beat, like, 50 fucking random brigands. Who cares? There's four of us. We got this shit. We just face down Sauron. You're nothing. Like,
but we also have cool armor now. And,
well, yeah.
Mortal? But, I don't know. Yeah. Like, whatever.
Right. But, like, so at the beginning, when, like, the ice, whatever, troll? Ice troll? Is, yeah, like, fucking shit up. Carl looks up and goes, oh, my God. Like, what are they going to do? Are they going to run away? I was like, no. Galadriel's gonna mess that up. Like Galadriel. Yeah.
You mean Mary Sue?
I will admit it's not a problem with Galadriel killing or whatever, but I didn't love that action scene because it just felt so anime-y to me.
Oh, yeah.
And I know people will point out, oh, the Jackson movies did that too. Look at Legolas, you know, skating down the Oliphant trunk and all that jazz. And I want to go out on record and say, I hated that too.
Well, I love both of those things. I just think, like, I'm cool with, like, certain elves just being super badass. I think it's fun. I don't really give a shit. Like, I mean, it's not realistic.
I just think you can be super badass without looking like an anime scene. Like, that's...
I don't care. Go be anime. Have fun. Live your weeb heart's dream. Look, at the end of the day, like, one of the elves just wanders up to, like, one of the most powerful gods in existence. And is like, yes, I will kick your ass in a fight. I can't win. You're immortal. I can be killed. But he kicks Fingolfin. Straight up kicks Morgoth's ass, right? And, like, this is his daughter, niece, one of them. Like, I get, these are randomly super powerful creatures. Like, this family is crazy ass powerful. Cool, I can live with it.
That is true. The sons of Finwë, or the line of Finwë, is incredibly powerful.
For the entire, like, series, yeah.
Like, okay, you know, so Finarfin is Galadriel's dad. Trying to find... Okay, so not a direct connection to Fingolfin on this little chart. I need a better chart.
there's a better chart somewhere. But yeah, the sons of Finwë, the children of Finwë. But I'm like, Gil-galad, who's like the great-grandson of this line, like, fucks up a Sauron.
I did not love his depiction so far, but I admit
he's fine. He has to kind of be an asshole, otherwise Sauron doesn't ever get to rise to power, right? Like,
I mean, I don't think he necessarily has to be an asshole, but, like, they can think that the battle is done.
Right, but he has to, like, make decisions based on that idea. And he has to, like, be a little bit in denial, which makes kind of perfect sense, right?
So Fingolfin would be Galadriel's uncle.
Yeah.
We're talking about who are we talking about here?
The current King of Elves.
Yeah. Oh, the last High King. Right. Well, like, in Tolkien, though, he knows that something is up. He just doesn't know what is up, right?
Later, right? Like, it takes him a while.
Yeah. Because there's been peace for... like a thousand years or something.
Yeah, a lot of the elves just do straight up denial for reasonable reasons, but like bad shit starts happening and they're like, we won that. And also, in fairness, like, Gil-galad should hate Sauron, but like has very little reason to fear Sauron, right? Like, that level of elf,
like, a lot of his family was
killed by Sauron, right?
In particular. Yeah,
but like his family straight up fights high level demon shit constantly, right? Like, they're not significantly, like, lower power than Sauron.
So, well, like, one of the things that is weird about this show is, like, some of the stuff I remember happening, like, thousands of years before, like, even the initial stuff that's mentioned in Lord of the Rings. But also, apparently, in later episodes, Isidore, like, the guy who has the famous scene from the movie of, I think not, and takes the ring with him, and his dad are in this. show.
So eventually, right?
Oh no, this season, like
no,
this
season. Remembering, no, that line of humans, the line of humans, like Aragorn lives like 600 years or something stupid. Mm-hmm. That line of humans with elf blood who is exposed to the high elves are all extremely long lived.
Yes.
They're still mortal, but they live for hundreds of years. Yeah. And I think it was only 200 years, 200 to 300 years before Lord of the Rings that this all happens.
No, it was 1,000 years.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's really? Longer. Because it's Aragorn's like 3 or 4 generations, like in these long live people. Because like the big civilization,
Numenor,
that collapses.
The Third Age is 3,000 years,
and then they break up into the two cities that like one is Gondor and one is the other one that gets destroyed in the war with Sauron, the big one with the rings.
All I can think is Osgiliath.
And then
that's not
both eras are about 3,000 years.
So, like, this seems like it's combining parts of the Second Age, like Second Age proper, with events in the transition between the Second and the Third Age.
Well, no, the Third Age begins when Sauron falls.
Right. But the creation of the rings happens. I don't know. Maybe I'm screwing the timeline.
I mean, the creation of the rings happens well before that, because he goes to Numenor, because Numenor only is founded in the Second Age, and it lasts for like a couple thousand years or something, and everything's great.
The rings are forged about 1500 Second Age, so like they're still about 2000 years after the rings.
All right, and no, like
yeah.
If I remember the general timeline, it goes.
Like, Lord of the Rings timeline. Key events.
They beat Sauron, right? Like the humans and the elves together beat Sauron before the rings. Then he forges the rings, but then they beat him again. Then he goes to the main human civilization as basically Wormtongue, corrupts that civilization. It collapses. Then they fight. Then that leads to the war with the I'm not going to destroy the ring and die in a river and all that stuff.
Almost. Part of that is combined. Like he's defeated by mainly by the Numenoreans, which is why the king at that point thinks he's hot shit and chains Sauron and takes him back to the capital to keep him as a prisoner. And while he is there... that's when he kind of pulls his worm tongue business.
Right.
When he can still look fair to elves and men. And that's when the rings are forged under his kind of helpful tips to people, which is why all of the rings, except for the elven rings, are bound to his control.
So, okay. It seems like the show is covering from about 1500 of the Second Age to about 1700 of the Second Age.
Okay.
Which is the first war of elves and Sauron, not the last lines of elves and men thing. And okay. The gates of Moria are shut and the founding of Rivendell.
Okay, so that's all going to happen at some point in these seasons. Because apparently Amazon's saying they're doing 5 seasons of this. Whether that actually happens, who knows? But we're at least getting 2 seasons because they are in
production. Oh, I did see that. Yeah.
So who knows? Like Bezos just, budgeted this for $1 billion and said, cool, I'm retiring. So who knows if whoever's currently calling the day-to-day shots at Amazon is going to be okay with this Lord of the Rings show going out for 5 seasons and costing this much money. Because the main thing we have not talked about is how pretty this is. Like, it is the best-looking fantasy television show of all time. And I say that...
It does look good.
If I was the special effects director of House of the Dragon with that battle scene and the dragons in it, I would have been so proud of myself. And then I would be sitting on the couch with my family, being like, you know what? I'm going to watch Amazon's Lord of the Rings. And I'd just get angrier and angrier and angrier the more I watched it. I'd be like, I put so much work in to have the best-looking fantasy show... And just get blown away by Amazon. it's beautiful. Like, beautiful. Best special effects of any TV show of all time. But All right.
When was Isildur born? That's what I want to look up.
Are we done with Lord of the Rings for now? Do we want to talk about only...
Isildur was born in 3209.
3209. So we have to get around 1,500 years of history.
They're going to compress that.
Oh, yeah.
But that's fine. I don't need them to follow the 1,000-year timeline. I'm fine with them compressing it. I watched season 2 of Only Murders in the Building. Did you finish it well?
Yep, sure did.
I didn't like it as much as season 1, but I thought it was still very good.
I enjoyed it. I did feel like the clues along the way were not as strong this time as the first season. I had made an offhanded joke to Kristen after like episode 2, like, oh man, what if it's the other podcast trying to frame them? Mm-hmm. Not meaning that as a tooting my own horn, because it was just a joke. So I was a little surprised to see it end there. And it still opened some weird questions about Cinda Canning evidently framed this small town mayor in the first season of her podcast. So that's a whole thing. But yeah.
Well, she didn't. By the end, she was tricked by the fake murdered girl. And
I thought she basically said she knew the whole time.
No, she says
that was not her real name, basically.
Wasn't her real name, but not that she was the murder girl, no. When she goes, how did you know that? She said what's her name? I can't think of her name. Mabel told her. She said, I know because Mabel told me.
Okay, I missed that.
Yeah, it's at the very end. I thought they got to the very end very quickly.
Yeah,
except
for the slow-mo. That was slow.
That was hilarious.
Oh my god. That
it was way funnier than season 1. Yes, but less good of a mystery.
I should not have laughed as hard as I did at that scene. I almost fell out of bed.
It's some of the funniest people in the world doing slow-mo by being ridiculous. It's fine. Yeah. It's hilarious. Oh. Season 1 for the comedy, season 1 for the mystery, season 2 for the comedy. But both are very good work.
Agreed.
Great. On to play?
Yeah. Let's do it.
I thought I'd be done with Xenoblade Chronicles. I'm about level 80, which is endgame level. So I can go beat the game literally within the next like 2 or 3 hours just by running out. There have been numerous big, very cool, if not totally unforeseen, twists and turns, but very, very cool story. Everything is super, like, epic and amazing. Excuse me. But there's also, like, 15 endgame side quests, which I'd like to do, but I'd have to, like, figure out, like, there's no real order to them, and they're all, like, level 90 and plus, and I'm level 80, so I'd have to grind a little bit and do this and that. So I kind of want to just go beat the game, but I kind of want to see the extra side content. And it should say how much I love this game that I actually give a shit about side content. Because for things like Persona, side content was just annoying me. Like, I did side content in this. I did side content in Skies of Arcadia. And outside of those two, usually I'm like, I'll do a couple. But most of the time, I don't care. I'll basically 100% in Skies. The game is excellent, excellent. But the thought of playing today, now that work has started, made me real, real sleepy. So I might just go beat the game to be done with it. Because work has started, and now my brain doesn't have the energy for 1,000 side quests. But, like, if you like JRPGs at all, I super, super highly prop Xenoblade Chronicles. And I'm going to play 2, even though I'm probably going to hate it.
Why's that?
2 is much more anime and much more fan servicey, and it has a like in-game gacha thing built in. There's no money for it, but like you get blades, and blades are your party members through like an in-game gacha system. And like some of them are very cool. Like the main character in 1 is one of the gacha blades you can get, and so is Cosmos from Xenosaga, which is also very cool. But it's all gacha. I don't know if I give a shit enough about a gacha system to play.
Yeah. I don't think I would want that either.
So I own it. I'm going to mess around with it. We'll see how I feel after I've done so. If I don't enjoy it like 10 hours in, I'll drop it. I'm probably not going straight to it either way, but like it's on my agenda because everyone who really loves one really, really loves three. They're calling it like an all-time great game. And I think one is probably an all-time great game. So I really would like to play three. And the story of one and two ties in some supposedly interesting ways, not necessary, but interesting ways to three. So I'd like to get at least some of two. But if I hate it, that's why God invented YouTube.
Yeah.
So yeah, play Xenoblade Chronicles. Definitive Edition. It's super user-friendly. It does. I said this last week, but I just want to reiterate how nice it is that when I want to complete the plot, there is literally a yellow dot from wherever the hell I am on the map telling me, walk this direction and the plot will continue to move forward. Like, I can go ignore it and go, like, wander, which means when I want to wander, I know that I'm not going to wander into a cutscene that moves me forward away from where I want to be. And, like, when I want to just be like, I'm going to do, like, six plot things in a row, I can just walk straight in that where that yellow arrow tells me. Every game should do this. It and Dragon Quest XI are the most user-friendly games I think I've ever played. That's it. That's my spiel. RimWorld?
Yeah, RimWorld is probably the big daddy of sim games, like colony sim games. I found myself in the mood to play it. It is really good. Slightly frustrating. Sometimes its systems are a little, like, it does a good job of, like a game like Stardew Valley. Like, I would really, I love everything about Stardew Valley except the farming. Like, which is a big part of it. Like, yeah, like a big part of it. Like, RimWorld automates enough of that and does some really cool emergent storytelling stuff to make it fun. But it sometimes gets a little fiddly and also a little like arbitrary, where everything's going cool and then suddenly it goes sideways in a way that just like doesn't necessarily feel organic. It feels like, okay, the AI has decided to press the button for the bad times, and then, you know, it will wane again. But I've been really enjoying it. I've, some strange reason, I've like found myself in the mood to play this type of games, and RimWorld is kind of like the one that if you ever try to read reasonable Steam reviews, it's like, you could play this game, but instead play RimWorld instead. So I bought it. It's enjoyable. So I will definitely prop it, even if I sometimes find it a little fiddly for my personal tastes. But Glazer, do you want to send us home by talking about something to encourage our loyal listeners?
Hey, if you want me to be someone who podcasts about things you are interested in that I am not interested in, you should pledge support to this Kickstarter. Or if you like JRPGs at all, in any way, shape, or form, you should pledge to this Kickstarter. The creator of Wild Arms and the creator of Shadow Hearts are doing a double Kickstarter, where they are basically kickstarting a spiritual sequel to both Wild Arms, called Arm Fantasia, and to Shadow Hearts, called Penny Blood, which like are basically just fully modern sequels to those games. Penny Blood is super dark and gory, and they're going like in the Shadow Hearts one, like pure, like mature, dark thing. And Arm Fantasia is a fully Wild Arms game with what seems to be a battle system almost reminiscent of Final Fantasy X, maybe with a bit of Grandia splashed in. But like, it does the whole environmental puzzles that you get like Zelda-like equipment to do. You get arms that have things. These games look incredibly, incredibly cool. It's on Kickstarter. They've already reached their goal, but there's a ton of stretch goals for them to still reach. I'm super duper hyped for these games. As an added bonus, two things have happened recently that are very interesting. There's the Suikoden Creators Kickstarter for Ayuden Chronicles that broke like every record on Earth and should be out next year. At the Tokyo Game Show, Konami has a big announcement that's being made by one of Suikoden's voice actors. And as of today, they just re-upped the trademark on Suikoden.
You think they're going to
I think that it's possible that they release a new one, but I also think Konami is a remarkably lazy studio. So I think it's equally likely that they're just going to capitalize with some kind of re-release. Or
the remastered edition.
Yeah, so they did a Konami Collect, a Castlevania Connection, right? They, like, two Castlevania Collections, actually. They've done a Contra Collection. They did, I want to say there's a Metal Gear Collection coming soon, like heavily rumored, if it hasn't happened yet. So
I've seen that.
Yeah, I'm 90% sure it's coming soon, or someone said it's coming soon. It was like a big leak at some point. But like, they seem to just be re-releasing their biggest series and collections, and with Aiden Chronicle obviously showing there's such a demand for Suikoden, maybe they'll make a new one. But like, when's the last real new game Konami made? Like, that was, you know, had a budget, was anything, right? So given that they don't seem to do that, my assumption is they're going to capitalize by re-releasing stuff. Which means you can just go play old Suikoden's and then be like, and Aiden Chronicle. However, that level of suggests to me that, like, supporting Arm Fantasia and Pennyblood means the companies behind each of them. I believe Sony is Arm Fantasia and nothing that exists any... Sorry, Sony is Wild Arms and nothing that exists anymore at all. It was called Sacnoth at the time. Is responsible for Shadow Hearts, but, like, it would show interest in these IPs and make us more likely to get these games again. And did either of you play Shadow Hearts?
No, but I've listened to so many Retro Encounter episodes about Shadow Hearts that I feel like I played the game.
You haven't. It's just phenomenal. Like, it's just a phenomenal, phenomenal game. Like, truly deep story, genuinely emotional, super hilarious, really dark. Shadow Hearts 3 is terrible, but 1 and 2 are fantastic. And Wild Arms is an inconsistent series, but it always had good ideas. It was always fun. But getting these games on modern systems and then getting, even more importantly, obviously, these really cool remakes, or, spiritual successors, sequels, is like a JRPG fan's dream.
It's true. We have, both Glazer and myself will have put copies of both games, so.
Mm-hmm. Roy got it for me for my birthday.
And, like any time I'm on Kickstarter, it got me to back the Sherlock Holmes The Awakened game. Ooh,
I saw you.
Why? I didn't like chapter one, but whatever. I was like, you know what? These guys and folks are developing this game in Ukraine right now. I'll give them 35 euros. I feel like I could do a lot less. So it's over now, Will, but I think you could still like pre-order or whatever. But
yeah.
Supposed to come out in February 2023, so it's right around the corner.
Yeah, yeah. I did a little reading up on it. I know they said they were dialing back some of their ambitions and only going for like a semi-open world. Exactly what that will mean, I don't know. But I did see that they were going to have some segments where you can play as Watson. So that,
yeah, because sounds cool. Thanks to backers like me, they're stretch goal.
So yeah.
You know, like
the last, let's go, people.
I have like backed a bunch of failed projects on Kickstarter, but you know what? The last one that I received was Warmer in the Winter, a Zine Quest holiday RPG. So, you know, you are not in the danger zone if you back Will Lentz based projects.
Why? Thank you. We'll be right back.